And welcome back to Coast. This hour, I'd like you to call us with your stories, like the things we've been talking about, or a question for Seth Breedlove. He is a film director, producer, and writer, and he covers strange monster cases. And we'll be back with him in a moment, and you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Seth Breedlove with us, of course. Seth, what are you working on next?
We are currently editing a Flatwoods Monster movie, The Flatwoods Monster, A Legacy of Fear, and I am producing a documentary called On the Trail of Champ, and I'm executive producing a documentary called The Cryptozoologist that is being done. It has folks like Linda Godfrey and Lauren Coleman in it.
Well, that's good for you. And you've been doing this for a long time now, haven't you?
This is actually only my third year. I mean,
that's it.
Yeah, we're scheduled out through 2020 though, so it's going to get real crazy. Toward the back half of next year, we'll be releasing our own take on the Bray Road story. So we're staying as busy as possible.
What do you think has been the scariest story you've been involved with or heard about?
The scariest I've heard would probably have to be the Bob Bosworth story from the Mothman of Point Pleasant movie we just finished. Bob and a friend were out driving one night on motorcycles, and they noticed two red eyes looking at them from the top of the North Power Plant. And of course, anyone that knows the Mothman story, you know, it was this glowing red-eyed creature that was seen outside of Point Pleasant, West Virginia. But they were on their motorcycles. They see these red eyes looking at them from the roof of the power plant. They pull in and they go upstairs, and they encounter on the catwalks somewhere about three floors up inside the power plant. They actually encounter the Mothman standing about 10 feet away from them. And the reason the story unnerved me, I think, so much was the fact that Bob isn't around anymore to tell this story, but we got the audio taped recording from Jeff Wamsley, who runs the Mothman Museum, and you actually get to hear Bob tell the story for himself. And it's one of the only encounters with the Mothman I've heard of where they encountered it so close. It was only a few feet away from them, and it was standing and inside a building. It's probably one of the more unnerving encounter stories I've heard in a project that I've been involved in. Now, like I said earlier, there were the abduction stories that Barry Clark told us, but unfortunately, those are off the record. So that was extremely unnerving.
Okay, let's go to the phones in just a moment here with Seth Breedlove. Tell us a little bit, though. There's a Halloween special coming up, isn't there? Some kind of spooktacular. Are you going to be part of that?
Yeah, we do. We do screenings here in Ohio at the historic Canton Palace Theater, which is apparently one of the more haunted movie theaters in America. And naturally, we're putting on a doubleheader at the Canton Palace Theater on Saturday, actually, of our two latest movies. So that's The Mothman of Point Pleasant and Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. And we're going to have a guy walking around in a Bigfoot costume that is actually going to show up in one of our upcoming movies. And that is, yeah, we're doing that on Saturday. It's the first time we've ever done it, but it's a gorgeous location in downtown Canton. It's this massive old sort of movie house. So we're really excited about that.
What is it about monsters, Seth, that has, they've captured the imagination of people? People just love these things.
I still think it comes down to, it's a great escape from the current political and social climate that is out there. It is an amazing escape to get lost in the idea of there being these undiscovered things that lurk in the woods right outside your own home, and sometimes you can go look for them yourself. I think the fascination comes from, more than anything, I think it comes from a desire to escape from our current world.
To the phones now we go. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Joe.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest, Seth. You mentioned Dogman not too long ago, about 20 minutes ago. I noticed a similarity between your description of Dogman and that of Skinwalker Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that this Dogman character seems to, pop up in various locations?
It really does. The strange thing about Dogman too is that it's become more and more popular recently. So you almost start to wonder if it isn't a cultural shift toward recognizing this creature as a, something that's out there. But these reports range across the United States, and particularly Skinwalker is, to me, Skinwalker Ranch is what made this sort of character, if you want to categorize it as that, famous. I think a lot of people associate Skinwalker with the Dogman character. But Beast of Bray Road, like I said earlier, and Wisconsin has their own Dogman. But I'm not sure how that works when you consider, the locations are so varying in terms of climate and terrain and things like that. I'm not sure if it's a supernatural thing, if this is some sort of supernatural creature, a paranormal, typical paranormal phenomenon, or if it's some sort of natural entity. I can tell you that biologically, the Dogman to me doesn't make a lot of sense. How it would stand on those hind legs that are so much smaller than the rest of its body and that sort of thing. Especially when you consider, that it's a lot of times these reports are of creatures with glowing eyes, glowing red eyes or orange eyes, which again really connects it to the Bigfoot phenomenon in a way.
Does it ever run on all fours?
Yeah, that's it, along the ridge, along the Chestnut Ridge. I'm not sure of any reports of that, but definitely Linda Godfrey has frequently written about actually a predominant section of her reports feature creatures, these dogmen creatures, running on all four legs. And I think when she writes about that, that's typically what she's referring to when she talks about the wolves or the coy wolf. It could be a coy wolf too at the same time. So there are becoming these large wolves are becoming more and more prominent in across America, especially here in the Midwest. I'm in Ohio, and last summer my parents saw two coy wolves back behind their house, and they're massive. It's a hybrid between the coyote and a typical wolf.
Right.
But yeah, there are definitely a lot of reports of these things on all fours.
Would they go after a human, a little kid?
Yeah, if you were, I would think that wouldn't be a problem for a wolf and a coyote hybrid. Definitely a coy wolf would go after almost anything that it could perceive as food, or if it's threatened by it.
First time caller Jay, truck driving in Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how are you guys doing
Okay,
tonight?
Jay, thank you.
Yes, I just had a comment, I guess, or, well, the other night, 2 nights ago, I went outside. And I normally go out there to take the dogs out and get a, drink of coffee or something like that. And I looked up in the sky, and there was just a light just flashing. So I normally just look up and kind of, see the planes go by, whatever. It's very clear night, and it went off. The light went off. So I kept watching up there, looking up in the sky, and it flashed again. So I was like, oh, this is kind of strange. So about 30 seconds later, it flashed again. And I'm noticing planes fly by, but there was no planes in that area. So I went in the house, got my wife, came back outside. I said, honey, look at this. And she looked up, and it flashed again, and then it just stopped. So I didn't know what that was. And I knew it wasn't a plane because planes were flying by. And in that particular area, and the light did not move at all. It did not move. So it really kind of puzzled me, and I didn't know what it was. So when I heard she mention that the light was just flashing in the sky, I just kind of thought about that and decided to call in. But I'm really curious of what it could be.
Anybody's guess? What do you think, Seth?
Yeah, any time there's flashing involved, obviously you got to be aware of planes. But if it's still in the sky, that's always
and silent.
Yes, still and silent, or flashing and moving wildly across the sky is another big warning sign.
As long as you've been doing this in your 3 years, have you done any vampire investigations?
I haven't, no, but we were asked about that recently. We talked with some folks from the Travel Channel, and that is a big subject that I think, in my opinion, actually is sort of an up-and-coming subject these sort of vampiric, there's decades or centuries even of vampiric lore, and it really seems to be taking off here in the United States. And in fact, in the last year, I have been told one story that revolved around a supposed vampire sighting, although in this case it was more of a giant bat, and they felt like it was a vampiric bat sighting. It was when I was making the Mothman movie, you know, all of a sudden you are being besieged with Mothman-type flying creature reports, and one of them was this vampiric, large vampiric bat report that this lady emailed me about that actually took place not far from Chicago, where the Owlman sightings are taking place right now.
Let's go to Alvin in Fresno, California now. Welcome to the program. Alvin, go ahead, sir.
Hey, Joy, how you doing?
Good,
hey,
Alvin.
I wanted to ask the guest, I heard you guys say earlier about dragons. I heard that there was a dragon sighting like recently, like in China or Japan, and you guys had mentioned about dragons earlier. So.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing, I just wanted to give a shout-out to my homie Riley out there. He's been trying to listen to Coast for a little while.
Already.
I had a little trouble, finding your station on the apps and everything, and so he's finally listening tonight. And I think he was the one that told me about the dragon sighting in China or Japan. So if you would elaborate on that, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alvin. You were talking about dragons.
Yeah, there was this. Now, the person that reported it referred to it as a flying lizard.
A big chameleon.
Yeah, a massive flying lizard, and the report basically sounds like a flying dragon report. Of course, that is one of the stranger reports along the ridge, and I don't believe there have been any other flying lizard reports along the Chestnut Ridge, but it does make you wonder. And I am aware of the Asian reports of dragons, and I think that's actually a fairly common phenomena to be reported over in Asia.
Tell me a little bit more about some of the other phenomena that might be out there in terms of the ghosts, because we don't hear that many stories of ghosts out there, do we?
No, I mean, the most common reports are sort of what I talked about earlier with the farm ghosts and that sort of thing. What you do have are these mysterious lights in the woods that almost seem to have their own life. And it seems to be tied more toward ghosts than it does to, like, UFOs or that sort of thing. Typically, when you hear strange lights in the woods, you know, you would think, oh, possibly a UFO or something like that. But in our film, we actually had a witness who was an investigator who was out doing a Bigfoot investigation, and he saw this strange light bobbing and weaving its way through the woods, and it almost looked like, you know, someone was carrying a lantern or something like that. But it was making its way through the woods toward him, and one of the other investigators that was with him turned on a flashlight. And when he turned this flashlight on and trained it on this orb that was coming toward them, this what he said looked like a doorway opened up in space, and there was light spilling through the doorway into the forest. This orb went into the light, and as soon as it did, this doorway closed. And these orbs, these mysterious lights in the woods, are seen all over the Chestnut Ridge, and it's consistently reported. It's reported by quite a few investigators of the strange and unusual, which makes sense because they're probably out in the forest more than most people. But there's a lot of those reports, and they seem to be more corporeal, more supernatural than, you know, like a typical flesh and blood encounter. And what's strange about that is I've actually seen that's one of the only things I've actually seen for myself while I was out doing any kind of investigation is one of these weird lights in the woods. It wasn't along the Chestnut Ridge, but I've seen them for myself, and there's something sort of unnerving about these lights in the woods.
These Thunderbird stories we talked about earlier, they fascinate me because I think there's something to this.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw it. There was a video just this past week that I think has since been proven to be some sort of hoax, but there was a video from a race where they actually caught this massive shadow flying over the track. And it seems like these Thunderbird sightings are becoming more and more common today, which seems unusual given the amount of air traffic and things like that up in the sky, especially drones and all that kind of stuff. But obviously in the 1800s, there were Thunderbird sightings, and we're seeing more and more of them today. And along the Chestnut Ridge, there are a fairly large number of these reports. And like I said earlier, they're not necessarily simply like a pterodactyl. I think when people hear Thunderbird, they think pterodactyl or like
they do.
Historic bird. But a lot of these reports are of massive feathered birds. In fact, the one in our movie, the guy kind of said, the witness said it sort of looked like a raven or a crow, you know, that sort of thing, but just massive in size. So there are these sort of typical, you know, Thunderbird reports where it's more of an actual bird, but just a massive winged bird. And whatever they are, they don't seem to be very nice.
No.
Very
swoops down on you.
Yeah, very commonly these reports are of these birds sort of attacking people or flying at people in an attack mode.
Frank in Hollywood, Florida. Go ahead, hit Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. Next week marks the 10th anniversary of my finding Coast to Coast on the radio.
Very good.
My question is about the men in black. They're not monsters, but I want to ask about, do they really exist? Do they really wear government-issued Versace or Givenchy black suits? And when do they wear black turtlenecks when their suits are in the laundry? And the question is, have you ever heard talk of a man in black being detained by a local sheriff or constable on suspicion of being suspicious?
That's an interesting question. I've never heard that they have been stopped or arrested, Seth.
No, that's definitely something that I'm unaware of. In fact, I'm actually aware of cases where men in black and local law enforcement seem to be working together. In these cases, and even along the Chestnut Ridge, there was a case near a mobile home park where local law enforcement were present as men in black were present. Now, there definitely are reports of these men in black. So when he's asking, you know, if that's a real phenomenon, there really are many of these reports. And they are typically these sort of shady figures who appear following a sighting of either a UFO or a strange creature. What their purpose is, though, is a little more vague. Sometimes they seem to want to shut up, you know, the witnesses to get them to stop talking about it. And occasionally they're there simply to collect information, and then they leave as if they never, you know, were there. So who they are, what branch of the government they work for is up in the air. I do know one of these characters called Stan Gordon claimed to work for the government.
They're out there. We're coming back in a moment with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Seth Breedlove, our special guest here, as we talk about the unusual, the paranormal, and the strange. Do you dress up for Halloween, Seth?
I don't. I'm a killjoy when it comes to that now, but I might this year. I might have to wear this Bigfoot costume we had made.
Be careful. Don't go on the roads with that thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Somebody take a pot shot at you. Let's go back to the calls. Chris in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling from Columbus, but I'm from Canton.
Uh-huh. Okay.
My wife, she works at the Palace Theater. She's a community where we volunteer and we help out the theater keep it going. Since he's going there to do this thing this weekend, he's got to know. He can ask the house managers. My wife has volunteered for over 20 years there. And
oh, great.
Reports, you'll find out the paranormal is right under your nose. And the Palace Theater has a ghost. It appears once in a while. There's a tunnel that goes up to like a dressing room. Shows up there. You know it when a ghost goes through you. My wife has had that a couple of times. There's a gentleman there by the name of Jay. He could probably talk to the staff. Will fill him in. The theater is a beautiful theater, George. If you remember the old elegance of the older theaters, this was saved, and it's just a wonderful place to go and watch. And they show old movies, and the volunteers get together and they do these. Like last a week ago, it was a monster thing. And like I say, I'll ask around this weekend. My wife would be working, but she's going to Cedar Point this weekend instead. So it's a roller coaster park. But if he will ask around the palace when he gets up there this weekend, you'll find, and I know there's a picture of at least a ghost sitting next to somebody in the audience that got scared. So it's there. I just want to let this gentleman, Seth, know about that. And also up in the area, there has been UFO activity. And there's a guest you had on the show that talked about the Minerva monsters.
Mm-hmm. That was me.
That was Seth.
Oh, okay, So I've seen something in the woods that I can't explain. And that's been about 30 years ago.
All right, let's let Seth talk about the Minerva Monster a little bit, Seth. What was that case? That's what got you going, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first thing we did was the Minerva Monster movie. And here in Ohio, it's very well known. The movie kind of took off here locally. But it was the story of a family that lived outside of Minerva, Ohio, which isn't far at all from Canton. That's why it's so frequently connected to Canton. And in fact, it's in the same county. But they started seeing this strange creature in the woods behind their house, and they called the police one night after their dog turned up dead, ripped out of its leash with its neck snapped. And in the months to follow, they, you know, all sorts of people around Minerva, Ohio started having sightings. There were local hunters, kind of that thing we talked about earlier, where all of a sudden there's armed posses combing the woods for their own monster to kill. And the story blew up on an international level and became very widely reported on. But there were all kinds of sightings of not just the Minerva Monster, but it was frequently seen with either two juveniles or two black cats. It depends on which witness you're talking to. Some of the witnesses say that it was seen with two younger, you know, Minerva monsters, little baby monsters, and others say that it was very frequently seen with these two black panthers. That's typically what the Caton family says, is that they always see these cats whenever it's around. And of course, the Catons say it's still in the area to this day. But yeah, that's kind of our local monster here in Ohio. It's probably our best well-known sort of local monster.
Does just about every community have a monster store?
I think every community has a monster story. It's just whether or not it's a human monster or a supernatural monster or some sort of, you know, biological, bizarre, undiscovered creature like a Bigfoot. In some cases, we're starting to notice that some of the stories of, like, serial killers or local monster stories, they kind of intersect in the way that the community and the local culture kind of views that story. There's a lot of similarities when it comes to, you know, murder stories and things like that, where they almost take on a legendary aspect that reminds us of some of the more bizarre creature cases.
Let's go to Mira in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Mira. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, I was just wondering about any DNA forensic evidence. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. I've just wondered if you've gotten any forensic DNA evidence of any of this. And there was a case where Bigfoot got hit by a car and they had fibers, hair, to test the DNA, and the results were that there's both. They say that they were part dog type mixed with part human. And then there were some people saying that
I think Linda Bolton Howe did that.
Yes.
Seth, have you heard of this?
No, I haven't. No.
Might be worth checking into. We can get you some info on that.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. No, when it comes to the Chestnut Ridge or, you know, anything like that, I'm not really aware of much in the way of forensic evidence. In the Minerva Monster case, actually, there were hairs, and even some weird scat that was sent to a local university. Oh, and some and what looked like a jawbone. They were sent to a local university that subsequently lost the evidence. So there's
that lost the evidence.
Yeah, there's strange cases like that.
How do you lose that kind of evidence?
I'm not sure. The Stark County Sheriff's Department bagged everything and took it to them. This was all actually documented. This isn't just like hearsay. The Stark County Sheriff's Department took the evidence that was collected to a local university here in Canton, Ohio, and the university basically contacted them in like a week and said, you know, we don't know what happened to the evidence. It's gone.
Next up, let's go to Tony in Pennsylvania. Hey, Tony, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, you hit it out of the ballpark again with your program. I have two quick questions. The one is you're talking about Chestnut Ridge. I have an old book by Lucius Beebe. I don't know if you know Lucius Beebe.
No, I don't.
He wrote a lot of books on railroading, and they had Chestnut Ridge Railroad. And there were all kinds of zinc mines and lead mines and everything else. Do you think that the strangeness has something to do with the minerals in the soil?
That's one of the theories I heard, and one of the other theories I've heard is that there could be the potential for things living down in those mines, because a lot of the mining that was taking place there has obviously been abandoned, and you have all these hidden caves and mines along the Chestnut Ridge. One of the most popular theories among some of the local researchers is that things like dogmen or Bigfoots could be hiding in those mines. I mean, there's some of the cases there was a case along the Chestnut Ridge that involved giant translucent caterpillars. You know, so where these things could be crawling out of is
that would be horrible to see.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's almost scarier than a dragon.
You ever get reports of praying mantis type creatures, big ones?
I have not read about anything like that, but I know that Lon Strickler at one point did write about that. Lon, who does the Phantoms and Monsters blog, I think I saw him mention something about a mantis report at one time.
To me, they're extraterrestrial.
Right on the ridge.
You specialize on the ridge?
Do I? No. I mean, that's just currently the story where I'm...
That you're on.
Enamored,
okay.
Yeah, enamored with because of the movie. But it's definitely... For me, there's more reports of more phenomena along the ridge than there is anywhere, any other one place in the U.S.
Next up, we go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne.
Top of the morning, Sir George.
Yes, sir.
Seth. This brings back an old memory of a monster alien that was either at the beginning kind of George's stay there at Coast to Coast or the end of Art's stay. And George, so you might have to help me with this a little bit. This was in the Pacific Northwest, where a professor from Evergreen College was hiking up in the Olympic Mountains with his dog. And his dog had gone a little bit away over a ridge where he couldn't see it, and he heard it yelling and screaming, and he came up over the ridge, and this monster was shaking this dog violently, and he shot the thing, and the dog actually turned to dust or something, as I remember.
Jeez.
And when he went down, it was like an alien-type creature, and there was a triangular spacecraft that was, I think, floating a few feet above the ground along with it. Well, he took the thing back and put it in his freezer. And a few days later, he heard noises coming.
I think that was Bugs. That was his name, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this thing went on for four or five episodes, you know, and it was quite exciting. And I guess he had told somebody about it, and he came home one day, and I guess the Men in Black got it and took it away.
that was Bugs.
Because nobody's done a follow-up on it that I know of.
No, he's gone. I don't know where he is. That's a good question. Old story, Seth.
That sounds like a good one. It might be a future film.
It could be. It could be. You never know if these people are making these stories up or not. Does that get to be frustrating for you?
It does. We do a fairly rigorous sort of vetting process. Usually if I can get some sort of sense, you know, that these people are telling the truth from talking to them, I will. But in the case of, you know, the last few films we did, we had other investigators who were able to kind of do that work for us in advance and help line up the witnesses we spoke to. So it can be an issue, but we've lucked out in a lot of the witnesses we've spoken to.
Next up, let's take a couple more calls. We've got Julian in Texas. Hello, Julian. Go ahead.
Hey, George, man, I've been waiting for a long time to tell you this story.
Ah, great. Go ahead.
I've had 5 sightings of the Thunderbird. This happened after the hurricanes came through in 2005 in October.
How would you describe them?
They're huge. First one I saw while I was out in the boat, I thought it was a plane coming over. Next day I was sitting out at the swing with my mom and my brother. And I was telling the story, and one flew over the trees and landed in a tree by the lake about less than 20 yards away. I've seen the eyeballs of this bird. I can tell you it's got a hook beak, and it's between 12 and 15 foot.
Feathered?
What's so amazing about it is I saw it was a juvenile with it, a smaller bird.
A smaller one like that. Is it feathered or more like a prehistoric bird?
No, it's feathered.
It is feathered.
It's a beautiful hawkish looking bird. And if my brother wouldn't have stood up and said, "What the is that?" The bird would have been sitting there with the juvenile. The juvenile landed, and the big bird came over the trees. There's about a section about 30 yards wide between the trees and the lake.
Can you imagine what the nest would look like, how big it must be?
I don't know, man. It's the most unusual. I've been wanting to tell this story for so long. And then when it flew away, it's the most amazing thing. I've never heard anyone say this before. But the wings made almost touch tip to tip, and it made a circle as it flew away. I could see it fly across the thing of the lake.
Does it make a sound, or could you hear it?
Didn't make a sound.
Nothing.
I couldn't hear it. I could see its eyeballs, though. That's what was amazing. The thing saw us and just took off.
And
I was within 20 yards of it.
Some people have reported seeing this bird standing on its, two talons. And it would be the size of a man. I think that's what Mothman could be, Seth. What do you think?
It's possible. There were a lot of reports early on of the Mothman that referred to it as the bird or the bird man. So a lot of the early reports seem to be more bird-like. Of course, with Mothman, the reports are so varied, it's hard to tell.
When's your next Kickstarter campaign?
January 26th, we are launching that for Bray Road Beast and On the Trail of Champ and Flatwoods Monster. So that's the next big one coming up.
How would people find it on Kickstarter?
You'll just go to Kickstarter and search for Bray Road. I think that's going to be the focus of that Kickstarter, but it'll fund all 3 of the movies. I should mention to you, we actually just got picked up by a distributor.
I was going to ask you that, if you've had that or something like Netflix or Amazon or anything like that.
Yeah, we finally got picked up by a distributor. All the movies are available streaming on Amazon right now. In fact, The Mothman of Point Pleasant was one of the top grossing films for 6 straight weeks on Amazon.
Fantastic. And how do you get paid for that? Amazon takes care of you on that?
It's all Amazon, yeah. But we did sign this distribution deal, and we just found out today that November 21st, Boggy Creek Monster and The Mothman of Point Pleasant are going to be widely available. So across iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, PlayStation, Xbox, all that stuff.
Good for you, Seth. If we can help you, let us know. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.